Okay, the recording is started.
Okay, March 18th, 5:30 p.m. We have a quorum. And let's get started with a roll call, call to order, and a interest disclosure, if there is one. Chris, you want to start?
Yeah, Chris, Roads and Water, no conflict.
Vincent Powell, Boards again, no conflict.
John O'Brien, General Manager, no conflicts of interest.
John Blome, Treasurer, no conflicts.
Derek Price, no conflicts.
Scott Witkin, no conflicts.
Terry Jacks, no conflicts.
David Olson, no conflict.
John Ball, no conflict.
Jody?
Jody and Agnes, no conflicts.
Okay, that finishes up that section. We're going to roll right into general public comments. Please either state your lot number, your address, and your name if you want to say something. Comments are limited to 3 minutes. So if anyone wants to start, by all means.
I'll start. Okay, great. I'm Ed Clissold. I don't know what my lot number is. 161, I think. 9036, Cottonwood Trail. I think we're all here for the same reason, and I don't know whether now's the time to talk about it or whether we wait till after, you know, the end, the public comment at the end after you discuss roads. But we're here about the road. We're all neighbors on the same road, and I think the fact that we're here says something. I don't know if any of you have ever driven up Cottonwood Trail recently. Tomorrow would be the perfect day to go up Cottonwood Trail and experience what we experienced. You're
pretty good right now.
Well, that's because it's below freezing.
No, it's really muddy.
Well, I know, but...
Yeah. I have some
pictures. So yeah. You guys can stick to one speaker at a time.
I think there's a couple of different interests with respect to the road. Most of us are concerned about the mud, but there's also the dry part of the year when we're concerned about the dust. And last year or 2 years ago, whenever the experiment was that failed miserably, to correct that has left us with nothing but a mud road. And if you haven't driven up it recently, you should drive up it tomorrow. It'll be the last time you drive up it in your car because it's atrocious. I use four-wheel drive frequently to get up my road because of the mud. Now, that's ridiculous. I get it for snow. I mean, I can go up it in the snow without four-wheel drive, but in the mud, you can't. So we want something done that's reasonable. I mean, we'd love it paved, I guess, but, and I'm probably hitting my 3 minutes, but I'm sure somebody will share. I think if we could just go back to what we had, I think we'd be happy. And maggot once in a while in the summer, great. But what we've got is, I mean, go past mine and you'll see the pile of mud that I plowed up just so I could pass. And I'm putting it on the side of the road so that we can deal with it some other time. But it's ridiculous. And I recognize that it's a short road. There aren't very many people on it, and that's the excuse we get frequently. Well, there just aren't very many residents on the road. But there's just as many residents per foot as there are on any other road. It's just we don't have a long road, and we're a dead end. And so it doesn't get a lot of traffic. But the problem is worse on our road, or at least as bad as anywhere else. We just want the same consideration as everywhere else. And it's our turn.
Thank you.
My just a couple of comments are that my kids will call and say, I invite them to dinner, and my kids will call and say, well, is your road muddy? Because we're not coming. Because they don't want to have to clean off their car. And whatever it is that we put on it, it's this deep of mud, and it goes up underneath your wheels, and when it dries, it's like glue. They send me to the car wash by Wendy's to go to it first before they will take me to the other car wash because it's too muddy. So it just, I feel like we pay the same amount of taxes as everyone in Silver Creek, and we've lived there 20 years, and
it's worse than it's ever been.
It's our turn, maybe. That's all. But we know it's not anyone's fault, but If you guys would like to drive up it, it would probably be paved next week. If you guys lived on that road, it would be paved. That's all.
Thank you.
I'll swear go across the back row while we're at it.
You'll take your name.
I know your name, but can you announce your name for the record?
Larry Layton, and I live up at the dead end. Well, I don't have property at the dead end. And you literally cannot go up that road in a truck without putting it in four-wheel drive. That is the greasiest, nasty. It's almost as bad as the clay that's in the field. And that's some pretty greasy, slippery clay up there. And I agree that the old Bullmag and the gravel road base, this stuff is just greasy. And it does not wash off your cars. And my kids are the same way. You know, nobody wants to go on that road. That's the first thing they say is, how muddy is it? And I'll go, yeah, bad. And they'll just go, yeah, we'll wait, you know, later. It's a mess.
Come pick us up at the bottom.
Yeah.
Adam Collins. I'm just down from Larry. And
can you give an actual property address just for the record?
9281. And yeah, it's always an adventure. It's four-wheel drive every day.
That's also Cottonwood Trail.
Correct.
Just for the record.
And last year, where they did some testing, with some, you know, whatever, a new theory or whatever was going to happen, and it felt like they got the grader down too low, and right now we're just down to that clay level. And, you know, the trash truck goes up and leaves huge ruts, and he goes off to one side. He's kind of sideways there, and I come down it just going real slow sideways in four-wheel drive because it's so greasy, but it's definitely the worst I think it's been in like 10 years at least. It seems.
Is that one of your black Jeeps out there with all the mud on it?
It's his.
Yeah. Is that from the road?
Yeah.
It is. And you won't believe when I washed it last. But
yes, we.
Yeah.
It's only one trick. Even at 5 miles an hour,
my relations
crawling up and down that road, you cannot avoid it.
Thank you.
Just I was on over here. I might want 75. I think it's 300. I think lost 146. Yeah, just that's a direct in front of the driver.
She's showing her phone to the trustees.
It is clay. That's so what makes it. And I've been on this road for 15 years now, 16. And so it's clay. So when it's like that, it's almost impassable even for the drivers with the wheels. And the last 2 years, I think it was the same kind of flyways. And before that, it's neighbors mentioned that it was better even though it was a little bit of a road for the last 2 years. It's clay, very soft, and just impassable.
General Mayor, I live with her.
9175 Cottonwood.
Yeah, it, yeah, I bought it. We knew it was a dirt road. It's been chunky. I'm okay with that. These last 2 years, that's why you had a good turnout from the neighborhood. It's like, it gets to be about 3 or 4 inches of really saturated, greasy clay. I think about a week and a half ago, the grader came by and actually scraped.
No, that was me.
That was me.
Oh, thank you. It just, because it was just bonkers. It's like, I can deal with snow. I'm ready for snow, ice, bring it. We're all ready for it, but the mud is next level. And it's like, go back to like putting lots of gravel and magging it. Would be static. Yeah, would I love to have it paved? Yeah. But I'm not going to be greedy. If we just had a good level of gravel, did that for a few years, packed it in and magged it, I'd just be tickled pink. But what we have now, it's not ticklish. Thank you.
And can I just say, then when the snowplow comes by, they need to not plow it down to the dirt. If they could leave some snow on top of it, it would be better than scraping it down to the mud every time.
It's hard to do, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. True. The blade just goes where it's going to go.
Well, they need to leave ice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's dirt roads are hard. Dirt driveways.
Would you like me?
Yeah, I'll do that. Jeff Whiting, I think it's lot 150, 8946 Cottonwood Trail. There's three businesses on that road plus a trailhead and a residence. So my main concern, I live pretty close to the road, is the dust. And you know, the mag's great. I never really had a complaint, but this Permazine, it's a box truck with UPS going down the road.
Jeff is sharing the pictures on his own to the trustees.
It's, you know, it doesn't do any good. And you get a lot of traffic over a day. And there's no point in dusting your house or washing your car with that street. It's really bad. The greasiness, it's a narrow road. I know they're going to work on it, but you pull over, if you don't know your ditches in this neighborhood, a little bit of snow, it'll suck you right in, just the mud. I had problems with my all-wheel drive about 2 weeks ago. There was so much mud out there, and I took it to the dealer, and they called it I just let light dust mud up in there. They cleaned it out, but it was making noise. It was the first time I've had that. I've been in the car for about 4 years. Just the amount of traffic on it with the box trucks, you know, FedEx, they don't have to speed. It's just very dusty. This mud, when they put the mag water down, you'd have mud that would be in your driveway for every day or two from driving on it. And that was it. It's every time it gets wet, your driveway's a mess, your car's a mess, and if they do mag it, let's do it early. And also, I've turned in a notice on Tally Ho. I guess the county's going to look at it. But you need to know that those gas lines at the Tally Ho have been exposed for several years to widen their parking space. And I've talked to everybody in the world about it. And I've been informed that now something's going to happen. But how many properties can you rent? They have their cabin, their house is a duplex, and they can stay in the barn too. So, and they leave their lights on all night long for the people to come in to find their place all night long. And that's a new ordinance too. So, and then I will catch up with a picture of the manure pile that's bigger than a garage. That I'm inundated with flies. I can work over in Glenwild with doors open. I'd see one fly in a month's worth of work inside a house.
So Jeff, that's 3 minutes, so if you could wrap it up.
Oh, and that's the end of the story.
Thank you.
I guess I'm last?
That's for last.
Okay, I really like your last name, by the way. Exactly the same.
And Bob, if you would state your name and address for the recording, please.
John.
Sorry.
Be patient.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm at lot 153, and I was on this board for 8 years, chair of the board for several years, and one of the reasons that road wasn't improved when I was on the board is I was afraid people would think I had undue influence. I'm no longer on the board, obviously, and quite honestly, I would like very much to see an improvement of some sort. We thought we might have one last year, but it actually made things worse. I agree with everything that I've heard from these good people, my neighbors, and I would encourage you to look carefully at doing something better in the very near future with that road, not only for the upper part, but the lower part to Cottonwood Trail. Thank you.
May I ask your name for the recording, please, in the minutes?
I gave it, but it's Bob Olson.
Oh, thank you.
O-L-S-O-N.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your comments. It's on the chance that there's 15 seconds of Bob's time left.
He doesn't share, but if there's 15 seconds, go for it.
Just, we've heard rumors about Rotomill being available for the neighborhood. We'd like to be at the top of the list.
All right. Chris has been feverishly taking notes, so yeah, I mean, when it comes to the road section.
If we can have that, I mean, someone else is going to get it.
Chris will jump right into that. I think we're done with public comments.
Well, we have one more.
My neighbor that couldn't make it down, that the drink goes down her driveway and brings all kinds of silt in her driveway.
At the end of the meeting.
We have one more online.
Okay.
We have one comment online. Go ahead, Trevor.
Yeah, hi. My name is Trevor Rometta, and I'm at 7850 Wasatch Way. Everything that everyone said on Cottonwood Trail is a carbon copy of what I'm going through on our small little section of road. I don't have to deal with the steepness that they do, but it's awful. I mean, it's the mud is deep. My car is trashed. I have to drive my car to the end of the street to walk my dog. I can't even leave my house. So it's just, it's unacceptable. And this is the public easement that gets you over to the Glenwild Trail is on this road. So it's also widely used. And I think you all have seen my emails and I've talked to Chris personally, but I'm feeling everything that everybody has said already. So that's it from me.
Thank you for the public comments. Chris is definitely going to address a lot of this when he has time in this meeting, the next 15 minutes. So if we can move on to the admin and the financial piece.
Okay. Next item of business would be 3A, which is approval of the February 11th, 2025 minutes. I'll open it up for either discussion or voting for the trustees.
Motion to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
And Carrie, Scott made the motion. Carrie seconded. And John in the vote. And for the record, at 5:48 p.m., Rick Greasy is now in attendance. Moving on to item 3D, approval of expenditures. We have two expenditures for which we are seeking approval, the January and February snow plowing invoices. At this time, I'll open up for the discussion or voting.
I motion to approve the invoices.
Second.
Scott made the motion, Otto seconded.
Aye.
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 Aye. Hi, John Ball on phone.
Okay. So that vote was unanimous with seven voters. Last item in the admin and financial section is item 3A. We are Nathan Bracken, our legal counsel, is going to give us a legislative update.
Hi, folks. I'll try to be quick. So this is a relatively light session compared to last one. I'll just go through a couple bills that may have an impact on the service area. The first is HB 12. This was initially a bill that raised some concern amongst the local government community because it would have prohibited all local governments in Utah from entering into contracts that have certain terms. Now, most of these terms are terms I don't like. They're indemnity provisions or arbitration provisions or choice of law provisions that put venue outside of Utah if there's a dispute, but they also happen to be the types of provisions that many vendors insist upon and are the types of provisions that some of those vendors, particularly large vendors or sole source vendors that don't have a lot of competition, will walk away from if you don't agree to them. So there was a concern that if this bill passed, that it would make it very difficult for smaller cities and districts to procure services. The bill was subsequently amended to, I think, what's become a good bill, where it says that these types of provisions are void. And so what that means is we can negotiate a contract, and oftentimes we get these big boilerplate contracts from vendors. If any of these provisions are included, they're void. It also allows me as the attorney or the attorney for any local government entity to waive these requirements through written authorization. So I think it started off as a potentially problematic bill, but ended up in a good place. My thought is it's not my job to represent the other side. If we have some sort of out-of-state vendor that wants these provisions, fine, I'll agree to them, but they won't be void under the law and they won't be able to enforce them. The other bill, the next bill moving down kind of the numeric list is HB 81. I don't think that this will impact the service area because you don't currently include fluoride in your water system, but effective May 7th of this year, no water system in the state may put fluoride into its system. So in the future, if you ever were to make that decision or want to use fluoride, you can no longer do that. The next bill is one that we've talked about before. This is HB 274. This is a bill that Representative Snyder, who carries most of the water legislation, introduced. This is a bill that responded to a study that the Division of Water Resources did last year. The study came out in November, and it was basically focused on how water systems throughout the state are funded. And one of the recommendations that it made was that tiered rates in Utah for culinary use and other uses are basically too low. And they're low at the top end and not sufficient enough to incentivize particularly high users to use less water. And there are two reasons for that, and that is that municipalities, when they set water rates, must make the rates reasonable. And when special districts set those rates, they must have the rates tie in to their actual costs. And sometimes what's an actual cost or what's reasonable may not be sufficient to incentivize the highest water users to conserve. And so that report recommended that the legislature make some changes to that and allow special districts and cities to impose very high top conservation tier rates. And so that's what this bill does, is it allows all water providers, districts, and cities to enact conservation tiers. And so for water providers that have over 500 connections, which the service area does not, they have to do this by 2027. The service area does not have to do this as a smaller entity, but it could if it wanted to, meaning that it could enact conservation rates, and such rates would be deemed to be reasonable or tied to actual costs. We wouldn't need to make a showing on that. And so this bill will go into effect in, I believe, May of this year. And so that was perhaps one of the largest, I'd say one of the more big blockbuster water bills of the session. And again, it's just an evolving, the latest in a long line of efforts by the legislature to require and incentivize conservation throughout the state. And this bill is really focused mainly on not the average user, but the users who are really at the top end of a water system's water usage. And those were the folks that the report identified as being the intended audience for this bill, for lack of a better term. The next bill that I want to talk about is HB 285. That's also by Snyder. That's a bill that will consolidate funding into a new water infrastructure fund. There right now are a number of funds that the service area and other water providers can get public money from through the state. Some of them are operated by the Division of Water Resources, others by the Division of Drinking Water, some by the Division of Water Quality. This bill will require those boards to coordinate with each other and determine whether or not to send money back and forth to a new general fund for water infrastructure or to each of these individual funds that are each operate under separate programs. And Vince, I think I think the fund we're thinking about for our water infrastructure upgrades is through the Division of Drinking Water, correct?
Correct.
So the idea here is to make the most of the money that we have. It ties into legislation HB 280 that was passed last year, which created this kind of catch-all fund. The next bill I want to talk about is SB 50. So this was a bill by Senator Musselman. This is a bill, I'm sorry, not Musselman. This is a bill by, Senator Musselman. So historically, special districts have not been able to pay their board members more than $5,000 a year. This bill removes that requirement. So the board is now basically, when this bill goes into effect, under the same terms and conditions as the city council, meaning that you can set your compensation if you so desire at any amount you want, but you do have to go through a public hearing and notice process. Again, that's not something I think the service area has ever discussed, but that is a change from what we've had in past in prior laws. There's another bill, SB 35, that'll make it easier for us to do water transfers. So the way that we do a water transfer now is if it's a water right, we'll get a deed. And then the deed is what updates the actual ownership that's recorded with the county. But in order to update the records of the Utah Division of Water Rights or the State Engineer's Office, you usually file what's called a water deed addendum. And that's just a one-page form that you fill out and you file it with the deed. And when it goes to the county recorder's office, the county recorder will send that addendum over to the State Engineer's Office and they'll update ownership of the water right automatically. In the past, you would have to sign those deeds physically and in person, and that just kind of makes it harder for that to take place. But now under this bill, basically we'll be able to do it by facsimile or electronic means. So it allows electronic signatures for those deed addenda, which will make things easier for us when we process dedications. Let's see. The other big bill that'll likely have some type of an impact is SB 80 from Senator Sandel. For the last couple of years, the legislature has been working on ways to fund the Safe Drinking Water Act program. The Safe Drinking Water Act is a federal law, but it's administered at the state level by the Department of Environmental Quality and specifically the Division of Drinking Water. And so there have been a few bills over the years. The intent of this bill is to authorize the Division of Drinking Water to come up with a fee schedule that will be assessed against all water suppliers in the state. The fee will be based in part on that water provider's consumption. This bill does not create the fee itself, but it does create the process by which the division will go through a rulemaking, which will have notice and comment, and will come up with a fee schedule that every water supplier will have to pay. This is a bill that I worked on behalf of Rural Water. In working with Nathan Lundstedt, the director of the Division of Drinking Water, he expects that this will probably amount to about a 75 cents per year fee for each water user. This isn't the way I would do it, but it is the way that the legislature decided to address this issue. So those funds will be collected and then passed on to the division. I will say I was able to get some language in here. Because this is going to be a mandatory fee, we're not going to have any say over how much it costs. I was able to get some language exempting special districts from having to hold a fee hearing on a fee that's mandatory that we can't change or do anything with. So hopefully that'll at least save us some costs there. And then the last bill is SB 314. That's the UASD's cleanup bill. I don't know if it has any provisions that really impact the service area. If it does, it does have some language that I drafted for another client about when districts can accept declarations of candidacies for elections. There are some districts that don't do a 40-hour work week. They do 4-10s and they're closed on Friday. The way that the old code was written is you basically had to be on a normal 40-hour work week where you're open on Fridays, and that didn't make sense for the districts that work 4-10s because they're already open 40 hours a week and it was difficult for them to reopen on a Friday. So this bill just allows you, as long as you're having a 40-hour work week, to just accept declarations of candidacy during that normal work week. So those are the key water bills that I see as having some relationship to the service area this year. Happy to take any questions from the board.
Questions for Nathan? Nope. All right. Thanks, Nathan.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Nathan. Operations, do you have anything on the public side?
The only real update, we do have a closed session item, is the rural water rate study. And so we're pretty much ready to go with that here in the next few days for me to distribute to the board members. Just as a reminder, this model is just going to show what our current rates are, the revenue based on last year's data as far as usage goes, and allows for various assumptions as rates change.
Okay, thank you.
I'm moving on to section 5 of the agenda. That's water. Turn it over to our water operator. If we have a water update, if you'd like to give one, that would be the time.
I don't have anything in water because it's winter time. We're not doing any projects or anything like that right now. Water systems.
Okay, then we can move on to item 6 on the agenda.
I just had a question on water actually. Okay. I was just curious. I know that we're going to have a rate fee session potentially in May. And I've heard rumors or some people have been saying that we're going to have a water discussion at the next board meeting in April. I don't know if that's correct, but as a board member, I would love to kind of see ahead of a public meeting, like drafts of what we're proposing for our upcoming rates and what's being proposed. And, you know, I haven't heard or seen anything in several months on that.
I think that goes to the rate and fee schedule that Vince just talked about.
But rural water really only deals with connected, so it doesn't deal with the overall fee structure. So I'm not sure.
Yeah, we haven't prepared the recommendations for rate and fee schedule. There's only going to be a small number of items on there because we did our big rate and fee schedule last year. And kind of the pattern we've been modeling is to do those rate and fees every 2 years. So this follow-up rate and fee is basically to clean up some of the items, i.e. over-allocation tiers that were discussed latter half of last year.
Share will have that, even though the rural water study really only deals with the connected. What you will share will also have overages for upper.
Yeah, it'll basically, staff will put together recommendations on any updates of the rate and fee. And again, I think there's only going to be 3 or 4 cleanup fee schedules.
Okay, thank you.
I thought rural water was like going to run models for different suggested rates. Was that part of the project?
Well, that's what the model is. They have no idea what you guys want to do as far as
I understand that. But just based on what other areas are doing, I thought they were going to run it based on your usage. If you did
this, yeah, so the rate, so the rate study does nothing in comparison to other water systems. Okay. Rural water will be the first group to tell you that that's comparing apples and pineapples.
Okay. That aside, are they or are they not going to present, you know, if you were to come in at a rate of X based on your usage, that would generate?
Yep, that's part of
that. That is part of that. Okay.
Yep. And it'll basically, you know, give us the opportunity downstream to run 3 or 4 different models, essentially, right, in comparison.
Can you think of ways to bring us as trustees into the process so that by the April meeting, we have some, I guess, foundational knowledge on what direction potentially going in, and then more importantly, between April and May, before the hearing, we can actually speak to what went into it?
Absolutely. So Rural Water is willing to come out and present the model.
I'm not talking about that. I was really more focused on the excessive usage fees, because Rural Water is really just taking whatever the usage data against the cost and
compare.
Correct. I'm really more concerned about the tiered pricing.
Yep.
What that's going to look like.
Yep.
Okay.
And also, I know, like previously, you're saying it's like apples to pineapples, but we did see studies that came from staff previously that did look at different areas, and there was a lot of pushback, and there was a lot of things in those data slides that were, there was a lot of inconsistencies. And so, yeah, I agree that it was apples to pineapples, or like there weren't apples to apples. There weren't good comparisons. So if we're not going to use data against other districts around us, I just think that, like, I mean, I mentioned this to John, I feel like I'll feel really uncomfortable going into an April meeting with the public if we haven't had time to all be digesting this, whether that means that maybe staff, so we don't have a quorum, like holds little workshops where 2 or 3 of, you know, in a day where you could say 2 or 3 of us could come by and you can talk to us, so that we never have a quorum.
and kind of sharing what your logic is, and that we all stay really close on this, I think would be really critical to seem like a cohesive group.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nathan, comment.
Thanks. The comment that I would just make is, in the past with these things, what the staff has done is they have usually held a meeting to kind of brainstorm these issues where no one's voting on anything, but they'll say, hey, here's what we've done with potential rates. Here's what we're proposing, similar to what we do with the tentative budget. So that was kind of my understanding what the April meeting would be is, hey, here's what we put together. We're not acting on this yet. You know, here's the information we have. What does the board want to do? And then the board would provide direction and information in advance of a subsequent public hearing. And so just one other thing, if you're concerned about the wells, under this new bill, HB 274, which will, I believe, go into effect on May 7th, you can set the conservation rate basically wherever you want for those wells. But that said, I still think it's worth your time to come up with some sort of a process to determine what that rate should be. And so I think there's some tools that you might want to think about. So just for my benefit, the rural water study isn't talking at all about the upper lots at all?
No.
That's correct.
So there is no requirement for that now under HB 274, but there are some other things that you might want to consider with that. You know, I think like what's the most likely to incentivize someone to conserve, because that is the intent of HB 274. But anyway, my suggestion would be involve the board as much as you can, but use your April meeting as more of a workshop on this issue.
Right. I think the intent is not to cloak ourselves in HB 274. It's to have an understanding of how we arrive at a number and how everyone's treated. Not necessarily more along the lines of treated from the perspective of being deterred from using excessively.
Yeah, and one thing you might want to look at is the American Water Works Association, which is referenced in HB 274, they have some guidance that and methodology that you might want to use for rate setting.
Okay.
That might provide some guidance for those upper lots.
Thanks.
And I have that.
That's great.
A question for Nathan. Nathan, I don't know if it was the last meeting or the meeting before, you mentioned that there was some language about that the rates that we set for conservation for the overages, some of that was supposed to be used for the conservation efforts.
Yes.
Is that right?
It's supposed to be used for conservation efforts. And I spoke with the attorney who was drafting this. This bill, it ended up being passed on the fifth substitute. That actually ended up being specific to private water suppliers, which you're not, and only the highest tier. But that said, I mean, the purpose of these rates is to do conservation efforts. And I asked him, I explained to him the situation that you guys have with these upper lots, which is unique. And in his opinion, the bill covers that as drafted, as passed. And, you know, the conservation effort under the bill is actually quite broad. I can just pull it up. It means a program that is designed to incentivize, encourage, or result in reduced water usage or more efficient use of water, which I think your allocation limitation is. And the drafter agreed.
And I think, though, I mean, from what I understand is that some of the people who are in the higher brackets of overage have also procured water rights at this point. So, I mean, a lot of them, I think, are moving to that, which is great.
That's perfect.
Yeah, they're covering their water, so. But, yeah, I think as much as you guys can involve us, I think that would be really helpful.
Make us water nerds.
Okay, noted. Moving on to roads, section 6 on the agenda.
Okay, so item A is the snow removal RFP first. Sorry, Ed. The snow removal RFP was put out into the public domain in different places. That went out on March 6th. We have a pre-bid meeting scheduled for May 21st at the service area office. And then deadlines for all questions so that we can answer those questions and give them to all possible bidders that have registered will be on June 2nd. And then the deadline for proposals will be June 5th so that those can be evaluated and a recommendation prepared for the June meeting for the board to approve. Is there any questions for the snow RFP?
Okay. No, have you received people inquiring? Have you called out for
two
people? Same and
same two.
The same two?
Same two.
Incumbent and an additional?
Yes. But maybe, the people that are registered contractors on the state procurement site, if they put, they have keywords that they can put in their, company name so that they can, every snow RFP or anything dealing with roads will automatically go to all of these state registered contractors. So I don't know how many that's gone to. But I, as a sample, I received it just to see what would happen. So.
And is there any others that you know in like Park City or in Summit County that you feel you haven't received a bid from that would be worth like proactively calling and?
I mean, we can send some invitations out to some of the larger companies that are more recognized in Summit County.
I think that'd be useful.
We can do that just to see if there's a response. I think what will occur, like I mentioned before, is they'll come to the pre-bid meeting and see some of the prerequisites and probably not be able to be the snow removal contractor just because the workload's so much different than plowing a parking lot.
Chris, you said at one point that the ones that are legit, like pretty much check it every day and they kind of see it right away.
I mean, we had one last year come to the pre-bid meeting that clearly was signed up to receive a notice.
Yeah.
And he just wasn't qualified. So he didn't submit a bid.
But what about the county?
What?
Has the county had any interest in this?
No.
Can we invite them to have interest?
No.
We've talked with them through the years many times.
Can we try again? Because I've heard that they may have an interest.
Okay. Who did you talk to so I can reach them directly?
I prefer not to say, but they
afterwards, is that okay?
Yeah, that's
okay. Okay, just so we're not missing, it's not being lost.
I didn't hear that
they
definitively would. I heard that they could have an interest if, approach possibly.
Okay. Yeah, just so I'm reaching the right person and it's not lost in the Mass County employee.
And this is not apples to apples, but who does Glen Wilds? Is it part of their HOA or is it a service that they use outside?
Glen Wild uses a third-party company. I know what company that is. I can reach out to them and see.
Okay.
So
there might be some.
We can send them an invitation.
Okay, great.
So any other questions on the snow?
Anything else, Chris, on the roads front at this time?
Well, I can address the rotomill question. There's a possibility of rotomill. There is almost every year, but this year the contract has been awarded to a contractor and it should be moving forward. Gary, our engineer, is going to be trying to coordinate that for us. We have 3 miles of dirt road left in the service area. All the rest have either been paved or rotomilled. To specifically address Cottonwood Trail, in 2023, we started working with Gary to see about some of the utilities being moved so that we could actually build the road to how it should be. Because in places on Cottonwood Trail, it's 16 or 18 feet wide. It's not the 22 foot like we would like to have. Now, there's bonuses and drawbacks of making a big road. I'm sure we all know because of the speed and everything like that. but we were trying to work towards that. We have surveys for the right-of-way and stuff like that. And that would be the preferable method, is that we get that so that we could build it correctly the first time. But it seems that we're going to have to do like some of the other roads in Silver Creek, where we come in and we do what we can with budget restraints and then progress it forward from there. I can't promise like I've never promised in the past that we'll get road to mill, but it's an availability. And being where there's only 3 miles of road left, that's a very small task compared to what amount of asphalt that's going to come off I-80. Some of the challenges in the past on some of the other roads is a lot of that I-80 work is done in the middle of the night. And so our contractors that we hire to spread the road to mill will be having to work in the middle of the night, which we have to probably interrupt your sleep and different things and routines. But I think everyone would be okay with that if we came out and said, hey, we have an opportunity and we're going to take hold of that if the board is, if that's the direction that the board would like. I think if once we get with Gary and we get some definitive things and start getting some definitive cost breakdowns for that, then that's something that can come to the board here in April, May meeting and say, hey, it's going to be this type of project. This is the dollar figure. Is that something that we would like to address with the budget?
So is that, you know the road, obviously, but could an ambulance or a fire truck get up there right now?
I drove it on Friday when it was dry. I didn't drive it today.
I mean, obviously the freeze thaw this time of year is going to impact it. But
I drove Wasatch the same day that Trevor called. And he had ruts, but Trevor's issue to me is different, because the first 600 feet of Wasatch was firm, and from the corner down to the end was soft because the water was trapped in there. It couldn't grain anywhere. There's drainage issues on Cottonwood Trail, but when I've driven it when it's wet, like 2 weeks ago, I got mud on my vehicle. Now, granted, I drive a pickup truck. I didn't drive in four-wheel drive, but I drove up and down.
But this is just my perspective from what I'm hearing, is that it's worse than just mud on the truck. And I don't mean to diminish what you're saying,
yeah.
But what can you do in the meantime to mitigate some of this as we move towards spring even more?
So in the past, we've brought in some rocky material, compacted it down, improved some drainage just to try to get it dry until we come into the springtime grading where we actually tune up the road and do what we should with it correctly.
And is there a budget for that now?
There's spring grading budget and stuff, and so we would use part of that to make some temporary repairs, you would say, right now.
And if you did it right now, would all that material just sink? And
no, we're talking a few inches of mud on these roads from what was turned up. Am I out speaking that? I've been on it when it's been worse, like last year when it was really worse. But when I was there Friday, it was firm.
Sorry, I had already graded it.
Okay, well, okay.
That's what that pile is.
But I didn't know that, Ed. So
I know. I know.
But I'm more than happy to drive it right now or in the morning. But I know that there's a mud issue. And so the rock is not lost in putting it down, because at the end of the day, we're continually building the road back. Okay. The only way that we lose it is if we had a gully washer and all of it washed onto Bob's culvert.
So if you were
at the end of his driveway.
If you were to drive it, I mean, tomorrow morning is probably going to be frozen, so it won't reflect the condition that you all are talking about, right? But so if it's as sticky and as bad as they say, which is probably the case, they're all here, how long would it take you to get some material out there?
I had people there just after the next storm on Wasatch Way within 2 days. So, I mean, it can be that quick, depending on the weather. We have a little more weather Thursday. It's possibly that we could have them there as quick as Monday, depending on how clear the weather is.
Yeah, I mean, as much as it's an inconvenience for everyone here, I'm looking at it strictly life safety. Like, what happens if an ambulance can't get up there?
I've had that problem. In 91,
The ambulance couldn't make it to my house and my son was really sick. We called the helicopter. And I'd say about 10 years ago, there's a slip and fall at the Jay's house at the end of the street. And their big, it's like their work vehicle, the fire department, big boxy thing. I don't know what they call that truck, but it couldn't make it. My driveway's the top of the first hill. People make it almost to there. And that's it. And that slid backwards into the ditch. It has nothing to do with the mud, or it's just weather conditions. But that's a tough road. There's a lot of tough roads in this neighborhood, though. But yeah, the ambulance, they can have trouble. But I don't understand. I thought they didn't like the bumps in the road that they put down.
I don't know anything about that.
Well, they don't. The ambulance people, it's kind of one of the concerns that why we took them out, right? In the first time.
Referring to speed bumps.
There's a thing from the emergency response, fire and emergency, where they would prefer not to go over 2 speed bumps on any call.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of where we've made some changes in the past and removed some of the speed bumps. There's typically one, we put the temporary one back there on Westwood.
I really don't. But what I like is a dip. Because you can't put a bump on a dirt road, but they have dips, and there's actually, you got a bump there from the culvert kind of, but people come flying down there that are, I call them tourists.
So last year, the new culvert that got put in actually settled. Is that what you would like me to?
Oh, it's still like it's still a little rock and roll.
No, that's a joke. Because that was a little rough. But
no, that's great.
But all those speed calming things we can discuss at a different time. That's more of a discussion because the county's already mandated and set a traffic calming policy that we follow. And there's a process to go through that.
That's a perfect thing. Is there grants for that?
I don't know. So, but there's a process that you go through to get a speed bump or other options. So,
hey, Chris, I was taking notes while everyone was talking here earlier. There was a reference to a failed experiment. Was that the Permazyme product?
The Permazyme on the first application wasn't applied correctly, and that's why we applied it a second time with a different contractor.
And when was that? Was that the same time Wasatch was done?
Both Wasatch and Cotton were done in the same years.
Okay.
So.
And so they were done at the same time. They both failed. It was an application issue and not a product issue, you determined?
Well, looking at what I see, now I'm not the Permazyme rep or anything, but like the first section of Wasatch, have you driven it by chance? Okay. The first section, that first 600 feet to the corner is firm. The road is crowned and the water gets away from it. And then as you get to the corner and then to the end is where we had the issue and it was oversaturated. Talking specifically on Wasatch. Now, what we saw with Cottonwood Trail in the prior year is the application was done incorrectly, and then it was done correctly, and then it was done incorrectly. It was inconsistent. So we had a couple of sections of Cottonwood Trail that were really bad, and then there was a couple of sections of Cottonwood Trail that were how they were supposed to be. And then if we look at Brookwood and North Crescent, where we've done it as well, those are different roads, but we're having the drainage is there and they're just as firm. So
for those sections that were done correctly, does that product have a time, like a lifespan on it that is not long enough to meet the needs of the road? Because it doesn't sound like, I haven't heard anybody here say, yeah, there's some good sections and there's some really bad sections. It sounds like the whole road is bad. So for those sections that were done correctly and everything was good, why is it still not?
I look at it as we have these sections of road that are bad, and they're taking up. We have to look at Cottonwood Trail as a whole. So I'm not going to rotomail just the bad section of Cottonwood Trail.
I'm going down on the product.
The Permazyme.
Is it it sounds like it's not working where we're using it.
Can I address that?
Your comments are, go ahead.
The lower section before the corner, or before the intersection with Westwood, from Bob's house down, that's actually pretty good. I mean, it's okay. It has its chuckles, and the chuckles are coming back, and it always does because the water settles in a little dip, and as many times as we've graded and refilled and whatever, those show up eventually. But overall, I wouldn't say that section of the road is muddy. It's from there, the hillside and on up, where, and I totally agree with the misapplication the first time, and but they, even when they tried to do it right, they were dealing with the old material. It didn't get hauled off. It just got remixed or whatever, because the road was widened a little bit. They tried to grade it and put some ditches down the side, and that topsoil got pulled onto the road and mixed in, and so it's just a conglomeration of all kinds of material and soils and permazines and whatever else, and that's created what we're dealing with now.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's what I'm doing, is scraping it off and stockpiling it to get down to something that's more solid. I mean, just in the section that I can deal with.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I know nothing about this product and nothing about the application. I'm just looking at it from a common sense standpoint. If it's a process and a product that we used a couple times and it's not working, makes me think, should we continue to use it?
Well, and I think the request here is we want to see the mag come back.
Yeah, I'm
comfortable with that because that's what we've used for 20 years. We were looking at a product that has done well where it was done correctly. And it's firm and hard.
When we all came, most of us here came to that meeting, and it was discussed, and half the people, it didn't get over 50%, you know, I like it. A lot of people didn't like it.
Isn't Jeff Whiting talking? Just for the recording,
he came and talked about putting the permazine on and had the pucks and everything. Remember when he came? There wasn't 100%, you know, it didn't sound real good to me at that point. And now it's there's no dust control on that at all. And I think it's more of a maintenance thing for your end of it to have the road over time keep getting firmer and firmer. It doesn't do anything to the dust.
Well, Chris, you brought up magnesium chloride. I think it's a good opportunity then for all of us to be on the same page. I know in a recent email from Vince, my interpretation was that you're not a fan of it, the use of it, because of the effect it might have on the TDS levels in the water. So you don't like it. You're now saying we should go back.
I didn't say I didn't like it. So the thing about mag chloride is mag chloride is great for keeping the dust down, but mag chloride is not used to actually bind and harden the soil. And it has to be reapplied at least once or twice a year, depending on that, and all it does is pull moisture from the air to kind of keep the dust down. And so, you know, and just kind of back up, and, you know, Ed and these guys kind of know this because they've been in the meetings, but we were kind of had our backs against the wall that year when we first tried the permazine, because that was the spring after the record-breaking snow. And it was not just Cottonwood Trail, it was not just Wasatch, it was many roads in Silver Creek that had blown out and completely disintegrated that had to be repaired. Given our minimal budget, we went out and looked at options and talked to the county and other municipalities on, they were all in the same situation, right? How do we stretch our dollars? So when the recommendation is, hey, look at this product because it's worked well in other areas, We again thought, hey, this will stretch our dollars to do a lot more of the roads. And, you know, it's become clear that some areas it's worked well and other areas it hasn't. And as I explained in that email, we know what we know now. So, I think I explained it in the email that we're not going to use it full time, but we're also not going to get rid of it
full time. It'll just be another quiver in how we look at the roads.
So it sounds to me like you're saying those two products do different things.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So my when I heard you say Mag works, let's go back to Mag. In my mind, it was like they're equals. They do the same thing. Let's use this better product.
They're not. So that's okay. When I was saying that, I was more talking to Jeff when he was talking more of the dust and stuff like that. Because the road needs to be built correctly so that it's firm and correct. This product, the Permazine, has made it hard in the areas that it's good. And they referred to the hockey pucks. I wish we still had them. But we took samples from different sections of the road, and they made hockey puck samples. And some were really hard and some were not as hard. But that's what we were supposed to expect out of the road as a pre-treatment to make that road hard so that when we get rotomill or if we do asphalt, it's almost prepared, ready to go.
So am I understanding correctly when I say if we use rotomill, that will solve the problem? We don't need magnesium. We don't need Permazine.
If we use rotomill, it is taking, for the most part, mud and dust out of the equation, which are the complaints that we have here.
And then do you have to seal the rotomill?
You do. There's other maintenance things that we will have to do. Just as some of the notes in the neighborhood reddened at the intersection of Wasatch and Redden there, that actually is like over 2 feet of rotomill, because we had to bring the road up because it always pumped water. I always was having to fix that section of road because it's there in the wetlands and stuff. Upper Silver Creek Road is almost reflective of that, going up towards North Oak Ridge and so forth. It's over 2 feet of rotomill because we just continued to build it up so that we could get the road up out of the low spots and create our own drainage and stuff. But there's other areas where it's only 6 or 8 inches.
I mean, we would love to do a lot more with the roads, but we just don't have the budget.
We'd like to see something new.
Yeah, well, you know, and again, we're down our last 3 miles that we need to address.
And Westwood, that's the best road I know. I don't drive all over here anymore, but that's a darn good road.
And it started out as a rotomill road, yeah. Except for Bob's potholes that he calls me about.
Well, but I mean, it held. It's not rotomill. Yeah. It's pavement.
I would comfortably say that 90% of the roads are rotomill with asphalt on top of them.
And a lot of these roads, what we've done is I would say maybe a dozen years ago, we started banking some of the capital reserves to stretch our dollars, knowing that if and when this rotomill became available, because that material was then free, that we can tap into that capital and do a broader section of road. Or what we did, like for Redden, was through the years, anytime there was available rotomill, we would lay that down, slowly build it up to where it is now. And again, it's not a, we don't want to do it. We wish we could. But you know, we're on our second tax increase in 20 years. So, you know, previous boards never really took the incremental steps to increase taxes. So when we did our first one, I want to say 5 years ago, that was the first time in 18 years that a tax increase for service area was done.
Well, I think we can take a deeper look at how expenses are being allocated.
Yep.
In lieu of talking about raising taxes for people who are paying taxes and aren't getting the right minimum terms of roads.
Yep. So. You know, one advantage for this year was our road maintenance budget, just through normal growth, has increased 30% for our road maintenance without raising tax increases. So overall, the area is going to see more maintenance going into the roads this year, for sure.
But it sounds like, are we going to address this immediately? It sounds like this is causing harm to their cars and to their safety and to their livelihood of family members coming to.
Well, like I said, I can get some timbers, you know, some rock and stuff, and we can get it graded and pounded in to get us through. But typically, it's not till the end of May or 1st of June that we're doing kind of grading and stuff like that. So.
Can you do a quick fix for them and whatever?
Yeah, I can make the call tomorrow morning, and pending weather, I can possibly have them out here by Monday.
Okay. How much of an impact will that have on the roads, the budget, since it obviously wasn't planned for?
They'll give me a rough estimate on cubic yards and stuff that they feel that they need to put down, similar to what I did on Wasatch.
Chris, why, in your opinion, why does Highfield work and Cutler Trail not work?
The steepness of Highfield?
So it's a
or, well, you need to tell me where on Highfield. There, to me, I look at Highfield in three sections.
Yeah, so just going up the steepness of Highfield, it seems like, you know, I don't drive it all the time, but this Cottonwood Trail seems a world apart than Highfield. Highfield seems like it's...
So a few years ago on Highfield, we spent some extra money and actually got drainage and some big riprap rock in the ditches and stuff along the side of Highfield.
Yeah.
So for the most part, the drainage is the most important factor there for
Highfield. So Cottonwood Trail is seen as a saturation drainage issue. And
some of that, the Wasatch is a really bad saturated where it was, and the snow berms were holding the snow in there and it couldn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
On Cottonwood Trail, we have drainage there, but it's not the best drainage. Like I said, we need to do some other improvements there that we'd love to do before we make improvements. But I think, given what we're discussing tonight, it may be that we take some different steps to make some improvements and then try to make the utilities and stuff we talked a secondary thing.
But the composition of the road itself is the same as Cottonwood Trail.
So,
is it like one more clay, one's not, like?
No, several years ago we changed and we're just primarily using the limestone product that comes out of Parley's Canyon. Okay. Because it's such a much better product than a clay-based product. Firmed up, helped things, just did things different, and that helped improve roads in total with the limestone product.
Okay.
So, no, they should be pretty much the same at this point. Larry? Sorry. More, do you want to recognize Larry?
Larry Layton.
Sorry.
Larry Layton, you know, even when they do come along and put some good drainage swells along the edge of the road, the snowplow driver fills them in. That's a tough one.
I took a note of that from the comment earlier. Now, that lower section that Ed referred to, the first part of Cottonwood Trail where you're saying the chuck holes are before you get to Talio, that was actually crowned really nice this last year. And we had drainage going off the road. So clearly our snow contractor has flattened it out. And now the water's causing some issues because it's not draining. So
rotabin would be real nice.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. So Mrs. Lamara?
That's just my opinion, and that's my neighbors Lee. And we looked at, as I mentioned, I've been with Svetlana O'Meara. I've been living there for 15 years. I have a property for 16. So we're equipped and we're experienced. We can drive for another couple of months. And I don't want you to waste the money for a temporary patch. And it would be better if it went into that budget, went into real improvement of the road. And this is a terrible condition. It's been 2 years. So we've done it and we can do it another couple of months, 3 months. So, but
I agree.
Yeah,
and the contract. I can save that money and use it when we need it, when we can really fix it better.
They're probably going to just scrape away the patch anyways.
We've already gotten through a big part of the mud season. Now we got some more to go. We went through it last year. We made it. We'll make it again. I'd say I'm not in desperate need to have some gravel quick lay down. Save the money. Let's use it for a real fix.
Kevin
O'Meara. I agree.
I'm with that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that, but can I throw some out? If there's an issue that comes up and your car is a problem getting through the mud and stuff, if you can reach out so that we know, so that Ed's not scraping the road.
He'll come pull us out.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to come out as quick as I can and address if we need to address. But if you guys are willing to wait, you know, another 60 days. That would help with the budget.
I recognize I was in the meetings where we talked about road alignment and widening and what needed to be, Bob's trees need to get cut down and, you know, all kinds of stuff. We're never going to get there at our current budget levels that we're doing. And so I hate to not do something because we want to do that really good project, because that's years away. Unless there's some change,
some magic
major change to the budget, that job's not going to happen for a long time. So as good as it would be, let's just do what we can do with what we've got, make it as good as we can.
Are we contracted with the PermDesign product going forward?
There's no contract whatsoever.
Okay. And it seemed like we kind of struggled with contractors last year. We had the survey a few times and they didn't quite get it right. They'd come and grade it again. It was kind of getting graded for, it seemed like a month over and over. And that's where like all the road base ended up in our ditches. And so now we're left with this problem where if we didn't have the special product, we wouldn't have to have the special application and they wouldn't be diving into the road more, which is kind of where it's stemmed from. You look in our ditches and all the boulders and all the rock is all in those ditches.
That was Adam Collin.
Urban gutter.
Okay.
Urban gutter. That's good. Is there anything from the board that can you direct me with?
We'll get to public comments. We'll come back to public comments in a bit. I just want to kind of, if we can get through with the other agenda. If we're still talking about trails. If the board wants to take public comments.
Trails question.
The horse trails and all that. Are e-bikes allowed on those?
Okay. I don't put the regulation on that, so I actually can't. I don't know. What is
Basin Rec? I'm not talking to the trailhead going up to Lewis
Park. What's Basin Rec's?
Their word is mechanized. So if an e-bike is mechanized, then...
Then I guess the answer is no, Jeff.
But
in Lewis Park, I know it's not.
Yeah, I'm not talking.
Yeah, I know that. But the rest of the trails, if Basin Rec says no, then no.
Yeah.
So.
But what's the definition of mechanized? If it's kind of...
There's not a lot of the other trails that say no e-bike.
Okay. Thank you, Dan.
So it specifies.
Okay.
Basin Rec has that requirement. So if Basin Rec has control of the trail, there's no e-bike.
Did you see all the e-bikes going up 224 on the left? They ran them out right there.
But there's thanks for the
Chris, do you have anything else?
I don't have anything else for roads.
Hearing none, we'll move on to section 7 of the agenda. It's Jody, we'll turn it over to you if you have updates that the board needs to hear regarding from office manager.
I just have a few updates just very quickly just to update you on property transfers. There have been quite a few already. We've had 6 closings already in 2025. There's another 3 under contract, and I got a call about another one that was possibly going under contract. So there has been a lot of property transfer activity this year. We had 19 closed last year, and we're already at 6 so far in the middle of March. One of the things we're working on, what we noticed with these closings is that we were not notified for 2 of the closings last year in East Creek Ranch, which is Platte I. Those, there's 60 parcels over there that are in East Creek that are on Mountain Regional Water. So I think because we don't provide the water and the utility, they're not being recognized as being part of Service Area 3. So we've been working with Nathan and his firm to post a notice. He's worried about something that would be viewed as an encumbrance, but it's really just a notice to let them know for the title search to recognize that they are in Service Area 3. I'll let Nathan, go ahead, Nathan. I knew he was going to want to speak to it.
So the issue here is that these areas were included in the service area pursuant to a number of county ordinances. These are the ordinances that annexed areas into the service area. But those ordinances are quite old, and the county recorder's office has not indexed them to these properties. And so what that means is the title companies don't know that these properties are in the service area, even though there's a valid ordinance that was recorded, it just hasn't been indexed to the property. County Recorder's Office has said they've told us we need to address this issue. And I just don't think they have the resources to do it. But basically what we're doing is we're preparing notices that say this property was annexed into the service area pursuant to this county ordinance. And then we're including the ordinance and the plat in the notice. And what I, to Jody's point, what I want to be careful of is under the Wrongful Lien Act, we cannot file something that encumbers or burdens somebody's property. Like, for instance, we can't say, hey, you owe us money unless we go through the statutory lien process, unless they agree to record it or there's some other provisions, none of which really apply here. So the best thing we can do, and we've talked about this with the recorder's office, is just have a notice that says this property was annexed into the service area pursuant to the attached ordinance, which is recorded and is found in the county recorder's office at this entry number, and then say these are the services the service area provides. I don't think that counts as an encumbrance because they're not saying they owe any money, that they've done anything wrong. All we're doing is just essentially giving the recorder's office something that has a legal description that they can use to index these properties so that the next time a title company goes through, they have noticed that these properties are within the service area.
So that will make sure that those East Creek ranches, which traditionally we haven't been properly notified when they change ownership or receive property transfer fee, will get notified moving forward with those. I found that there was two last year that changed ownership without our knowledge, and that kind of opened up this can of worms. So we're working on that. The last thing is the newsletter. Normally we send out newsletter quarterly. The last one went out in January. Normally we would send out the next one in April. I am doing a conservation certification with Rural Water in early May. So I was hoping to kind of take some of that conservation messaging and information and include it in the newsletter. So that probably won't go out until May. And then I think along the same lines with what Nathan was talking about with the new legislation and really an emphasis on conservation, trying to formulate our message there. A lot of the newsletter is already done. We kind of have very similar messages going into each season. Obviously, this season will be, getting your sprinklers going, checking for leaks, eye on water, getting people online so they're paying attention and making sure there's no leaks there. And that's pretty much it, unless there's any questions.
Nope. Any questions for Jody?
Before we move on, though, point of clarification. Are our trails, do they belong to Basin Rec?
I don't think so.
There's one that belongs to Basin Rec.
The east to west connector that comes from I-80 and connects over to Glen Wild. That is a Basin Rec trail.
So to your question, were you referring to that trail specifically?
I'm just in the neighborhood here.
Yeah.
I mean, all the horse trails, the unpaved ones. And
yeah. I would think it'd be unfair to have in the record that, nobody's allowed to ride an e-bike in Silver Creek.
It probably helps keep the weeds down.
Yeah.
So, let me ask a question. My understanding, I could be totally wrong on this, was that we own the trails with the exception of the one you're talking about, but it was the Snyderville Basin Rec rules which we had been utilizing for trail usage. Is that not accurate? Or do we have our own set of rules for the trail that are different than Snyderville Basin?
There's a sign on the Silver Creek Trail.
That's a sign that came up for the service area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We
And if we don't know, we can find out.
Yeah. Or at least make a decision not to go with Basin Rec.
Well, we can find out first and then.
Right.
they're not maintaining the trail.
Or change. If you find out that you did adopt on a dock, you don't want to be part of Basin Rec.
That's a great point, Derek.
We don't need those kind of rules and regulations.
Thank you, Jody. Moving on to section 8 of the agenda is public comment again. So even if you have public comments, whether you're online or in person, even if you've said your name and address so before, we'd ask that you do it again. It's helpful when we're listening in a year or 10 years later.
One last thing. Ed Kussel and 36 Cottonwood Trail. I just want to thank all of you.
Yeah.
This is so heartwarming to see a completely new board with 7 members. You're willing to serve. I've been on that side of the table. I get it. And so I appreciate what you're doing. I look forward to a really proactive board that will listen. And so thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Bob Olson, Lot 173. This is mostly for Chris, but I think everybody ought to hear it. We've got some people, I think they're associated with the power company, coming in and doing work on telephone poles. And this is the second time. But they brought a vehicle in, and they went over a foot down into the soil where they drove it, and they had to bring another one in and hook up to it to pull it out. And then that one had trouble getting out. I went down and looked this morning. They knocked over one of my trees, and they've put ruts in that are going to take forever to fill. I would sure like to know when these people are going to come on our property. I heard nothing from anybody.
Well, go ahead, Rick.
I have a phone number for the project manager, because I live over there, and they've been messing with my property incessantly. No. So, if you want, I can give you hints.
I do need that. I was hoping now maybe Chris could work with me on it.
Yeah, we can pass that. I think when we talked on the phone, I don't know a lot of that. I was the one that called and checked on you, making sure, because I saw the ruts out there in your field.
You ought to walk towards the public.
Like Rick, I might have the same number, but I know Rick's properties impacted even more than what I thought they were going to impact it. They drilled a hole in the middle of his driveway.
Yeah.
So
to do that. And then they're putting a transformer. They call it a sleeve or something, but it's a transformer that wasn't on the plans 2 days ago, and then yesterday they were there. So.
Yeah. The stuff going on in lower, we have some idea, but like Bob and things, I heard there was some stuff going on Highfield. All we can do is kind of pass some information along if we don't know what's going on.
So. I don't know if they have a new manager or not, but this happened a couple of years ago, and they called me on the phone. They said, we put some really deep ruts in your property, and we'd like to give you some soil. I said, don't worry about it. I love what you guys do. You're keeping my power on. I'll take care of it. But this time, it is really bad. Yeah. Even worse than the first time.
I mean, I will say, like, you know, I got zero contact over the summer when was the company that did all the construction. Geneva, when did I get, like, nobody, I didn't get a letter, I didn't get an email, nobody knocked on my door. They just kept doing shit to my property. And then these guys actually knocked on my door and told me what they were going to be doing. And then when I talked to the project manager, like, they drilled a hole in my driveway. He's looking, you know, thank you, we'll make it right. You know, he kind of gave me assurances. If you have any issues, give us a call. So they do seem to be a little more responsive in terms of being able to do stuff.
Well, they were very responsive the first time. I just declined their offer.
Yeah, yeah.
But this time, it would take me all summer.
Yeah.
I move gravel that comes off Cottonwood Trail that washes onto my property to strengthen the roads to get the pump house. And they just totally ruined that. Like, they knocked over a tree trying to get out. I've heard nothing. So I appreciate a number.
Yeah.
I do want to make a note that in the lower, we just finished the utility permitting that's happening kind of by Rick's house and on Valley Drive. Chris had shut down work there, and we've been trying to get them to comply and permit for at least 45 days. And we just got paid for that permit yesterday. We are not aware, we have not been contacted about anything happening in the upper. So there was one I just heard of. I think somebody else said that there was someone walking on their property from Rocky Mountain Power. So we weren't aware of that one, but I was actually going to provide documentation. I had another resident on Valley Drive whose beacon wasn't reading. They, you know, unplugged their beacon or something like that. So I have notified them that they need to work with us, and but we do have permit and contact information now that we just finalized this week.
Thank you.
So are you saying that in order for them to do this type of work, they have to get a permit from your office first?
When they're working in the right-of-way on our roads, they're supposed to get a utility permit for different things going on. And what Jody's referring to is they submitted this project, and it's Valley Drive, right down in lower. And so it was surprising to see like Bob's or get the call that people are out on Highfield. And I don't know where this other one that Jody referred to is, but clearly they're probably preparing for another phase of the project.
Because when they're planning power poles, it's in the right of way. It's always in the right of way. It's off the side of the road.
Not always.
Bob's a better description is in an easement that they have access to.
So
it may not be the right of way of the road, but they'll have an easement. They can just do it anywhere they want.
There's a lot of utility easements around.
Yeah. So should they be checking with you guys first?
Yes, they should be, but utilities do whatever utilities do sometimes, and we're catching them afterward.
If I'm up in upper and I'm seeing these guys all the time, I didn't realize it was a problem. But as I'm coming down and I'm seeing them, you know, up there, should I give you a call and say, are you aware of?
Yeah, that way, like, I wouldn't shut them down because they were over on Greenfield Drive doing work. And I'm like, hey, you can't be here. You can't be in my right of way doing work.
Right.
And stop them. And that's what got this process going. They took a long time to get to this point so that they're finally paid and approved. So, yes, if see something, say something, just so that we can see what it is and going on. Because we've had the road dug up, and we had no clue, you know, people just, and that's not a good thing. So,
yeah, and the company's called, I think they're of our subsidiary, it's like 1884.
Correct.
Yeah. The way the guy explained it to me was like, because I got all those lawsuits with the fires and stuff
they created a separate company
that could get sued or for protection
purposes. But what they're trying to do is get all the power underground.
Yeah.
So that there's no more power poles to possibly start the fire similar to California.
Yeah, right.
So.
Any additional comments? I have a question. I've already asked Chris a question, but the rest of the board should know of something I'm concerned about. Did I say 153 on my lot number?
I'm not sure.
That's not my question. Anyway, that's what it's supposed to be. When somebody has a private well, I notice that we don't read their meter because it's their private. They have the water right to that well. I think that's a big mistake, and Chris is talking about maybe doing something about it, because I know of people who have their own water right that are going way over the allotment that we're required to live by because we don't have our own water right. And that's not good, because it comes out of the same aquifer, and we should make sure that we know what's going on and have some sort of leverage with respect to these people, because I know of one case where the water was coming off a water right that we did not own onto a property with a hose so they could have more water. And this sort of thing tells me that we may have a problem that we don't even truly understand. with respect to private water rights.
So we have metered all of the upper lots that are authorized points of diversion for the service areas rights. And we are monitoring those rights. So the challenge is when people, and they can have their own right to go out and buy a water right of their own. But the way that our policy is written now is if they have an allocation and they're exceeding that allocation, let's say somebody has an allocation from the service area based on service area rights for 1 acre foot, but they're using 2 acre feet. If they can show us that they have an extra acre foot of water right that they own in their name, then they're not going to be exceeding that. You know, the problem we've had, and as I think was noted earlier, is we have some people that were greatly exceeding their allocations, and those folks have now gone out and bought additional water rights to cover their overage. The issue we have is for people that are, you know, let's just say they're not connected to our water system. We have some folks in the lower section that aren't connected to our water system. They have the right to, they're paying standby fees, but they haven't. They're not using our allocation right now. If they have their own water right and their own well, that's their right. And we don't really have jurisdiction over their water right or their well. If and when they connect to our system, we can require them to dedicate at that time as a condition of connecting to the system. And we are aware of some people that have private wells that are diverting them with water rights. And I believe, Jody, correct me if I'm wrong, we've contacted the state enforcement folks and have given the state their information. But when it comes to private wells that aren't diverting our water rights, we don't have any jurisdiction over them. If it's a private well that is diverting our water right, we do have regulations to deal with that. We do require them to get additional water rights if their combined total of their allocation and their private water rights exceed the combined amount. But if it's just a private well that is not an approved point of diversion for our water rights, that's a state engineer issue, not a service area issue.
So Nathan, if there was somebody who had one or two water rights purchased, and is that noted on their account? I guess that's a combination question, Nathan, Jody. Is it noted on their account and then we're still monitoring it? So instead of using 2 or 3 acre feet, let's say they're using 4 or 6, we would be aware of that?
Yeah, so the ones that we have contacted about being over their allocation that are in the process of getting additional water rights, they've kept us informed. You know, they've said, here's the change application we're filing. And so I think for most of the people that we know that, and we didn't have a whole lot, but there are a number, and they were, some of them were fairly substantially over their allocation. And I haven't been talking to people directly. I have spoken with some of their attorneys, but I think we have a handle on where most of them are in the process of acquiring additional water rights. But the way our regulations work is, in the future, let's say somebody has a, we say, hey, you've got an acre foot allocation, but it looks like you're using more than that. We'll send them a notice. As part of that notice, we'll say, hey, do you have any additional water rights that cover your overage? And so they'll have a chance to say yay or nay for the folks that we don't know about.
And then they have to provide documentation.
Yeah. And then that would be included in our files as we go through. But I think for the most part, we're aware of who's over, and we have a pretty good idea of where most of those are in the process of acquiring new rights.
Yeah,
you're right. In the future, we may have people that buy a house, they start to overuse, and we may say, hey, where's your, you know, you don't have enough to do this. And they may say, oh, well, I got an extra water right. Here's the information. And then we just note that for the file, and we'd be fine.
And some people do keep us in the loop along the way. Like, so I have, last year I notified people as they were getting near going over or going over. I do have a pretty substantial spreadsheet of, like, the final numbers for 2024 of who went over and how much. Some people do go on their own and get water rights. And some people, like I have a resident today who closed on water, who's just sent me everything, and he's very much kept me in the loop. Some people we find out through Nathan because their water attorney contacts Nathan, so we find out that way. So I think between Nathan, Chris, and I, we're, you know, we basically talk to find out, you know, who's got water and who's in process. Sometimes we don't find out really until they contact Nathan or they do the change application, because anything that gets submitted through the Division of Water Rights for a change application to assign the point of diversion, which is their well, is when we would get notified.
Okay, so the really only black box there is an individual that's got a private well and, you know, one or two whatever private water rights that we have no idea. They could have one water right on their private well and be using three times that much water, and we wouldn't know about it.
Yes. Yeah. Because some of them, it's really interesting, actually. I spent a lot of time this year. I identified about 77 private water rights in service area 3. Some of them are, you know, in the upper, and they're just private water rights. Some of them are dry lots that don't have an allocation, and they have to be on. And so there's nothing, they have no contact with us at all. They have their private well and their private water right, and has nothing to do with us. They don't pay any standby fees or anything like that. That would be a dry lot. And then there are some people that are on a private water right who technically could connect if they wanted to. Some of those private water rights, they do have the meter on it, and they do report, they can pay for a beacon and do the water tracking through Ion Water through our system, but we can't require that. They ask us if they can do that, and we do allow them to use our systems and work with them that way. If that hopefully answers your question, but we can't mandate it. So when I call people and say, you know, even, hey, I've identified you, I could see you have a water right, I would recommend, you know, getting this in your name. We can't require it because it's their private water right, and we don't have jurisdiction over it.
Yeah, it's just, it's an interesting point because it's a more significant issue than I thought. I mean, there's 77 people. That could be a tremendous amount of water that's coming out of our aquifer, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
The aquifer we use. I mean, that's water right issues all over the state, right? I mean, everybody uses water and has a limited amount of water available to them by right. And so the question always is, wherever you are, how much are you really using? And so that's sprinkler head size, nozzle, you know, I mean, the farmers deal with it all the time with how many heads they have out in the field and how big the nozzles are, and they calculate. So it's not a new issue. It's not unique to Silver Creek. That's private water right issues for the state engineer.
And that's exactly right, because we don't have jurisdiction over the aquifer. Our job is not to manage the aquifer. Our job is to manage our water rights and our water system.
Does water right have to be in East Canyon drainage?
It's to be used by us, so there is a Snyderville groundwater management plan that the state engineer has enacted. And so if you're moving water, it basically prohibits the movement of all water rights that are out currently located outside of the Snyderville Basin into the Snyderville Basin. And so if you're trying to get water into Silver Creek, if you're trying to buy water rights, you can only really acquire water that's already approved for use, an existing right in the Snyderville Basin, and even then it has to be in the East Creek drainage. There is a little part of the service area that's in a different sub-drainage, and there is, you know, some policies and procedures by which you can move those between drainages under the management plan, but it's difficult.
Well, then, to Jody, this is Tally Ho, they had to get under conditional use when they got their license, had to obtain another acre foot of water, and I heard it was from Morgan. Do you know where that?
I don't know where there is, but they do have additional water.
And one of the things I looked up many years ago was the state engineer, the state hydrologists and their geologists, they do a study on the aquifers. And so when the state issues the water rights, they're not issuing any more water rights in this area than have already been issued. So that's a good thing for us. The other thing that's good for us is our drainage in our immediate area with our aquifer in reserves starts hitting something like 100,000 acre feet of water in reserves. That's in our physical aquifer. So, you know, from that standpoint of what's beneath our feet in the natural multiple layers of aquifers, there's plenty of water.
Any additional public comments?
No. Any public comments on the motion?
We have a closed session.
Yeah. I need someone just to read the... the verbiage.
Oh, yeah.
At the bottom there.
Make a motion to enter a closed session to discuss the character, professional competence, or physical, mental, health of an individual pending or reasonably imminent litigation and or the sale or purchase of real property pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-204 through 205.
Okay.
Second.
Rick made the motion. Scott seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's an invitation.
The time is 7:10 p.m. on Tuesday, March 18, 2025.
Thank you.
This is Summit County Service Area is now moving out of public session. Joey, will you let me know when I'm recording his stuff?
I don't think it's special for my life.
It'd be nice to
take
that out again.
Congratulations.
On what? You know, yes.
I don't know. I do think I can know that. You get those words mixed up, maybe.